Sorry, but it's away.
Did you hear anything I said?
Why don't you start it over, please?
Yeah, please, Sherry. Thanks.
Okay. So I'm Sherry Hearn. I'm from the Oregon State Public Health Lab. I just started here like 6 or 8 weeks ago. I know that we have a policy in our document control system, but I don't know that we've worked out the details of how that policy is going to be implemented yet. So, and that's where Oregon's at least as far as the laboratory is concerned.
Thank you. How about somebody else?
Hi, this is Marty Baim and Matt Bayshore from Michigan. And we are lucky here in Michigan that our legal department's going to help us with some of the patient verification, but we do have the departmental policy, department-wide policy, which we could share in the Member Resource Center, and then we wrote a specific procedure for the laboratory that, you know, may be helpful, although, as I said, we don't have to worry too much about the patient verification piece of it, but we could upload that to the Member Resource Center if people would like.
Karen, this is Karen Breckenridge. I did upload your policy and form to the Member Resource Center if people want to look at that as well. So thank you, Marty, for offering to add yours to that.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. I was going to say I can go ahead and talk a little bit about ours, and then, like I said, it'll be on our website tomorrow, and if anybody wants to come look at NC Public Health, you know, website. But one of the things that we got into discussing is the fact that in North Carolina and probably some other states, we have minor consent laws. And so if you've got a minor who is under 18 years old, they can request STD testing. And when I was talking to some local lab managers last week, I think that's a fairly common occurrence. So one of the things that we have decided we've got to be really careful on is that if somebody calls us and they, if it's a parent who, and they're calling in to get this type of results on their child, we're not even going to admit we have those results. We're going to ask them to fill out the paperwork, send it all to us, and then we will investigate and we will actually probably call the facility where the test was performed to see who actually consented to that test. And if the minor had come in and consented to the test, then we're going to come up with a response back to the parent that, you know, where you were unable to locate those records. Because we can't let the parent know that the patient actually had the testing done, or we would be in violation of state law. So that's just kind of one little wrinkle that kind of came out when we were working on this. And we also decided not to go with notarization. I actually photocopied my driver's license and found out that it actually works pretty good. So we're going to actually have the person who's requesting the results on the patient or the person who's requesting it to send us a copy of either their driver's license or their ID card that's been issued by a federal, state, or local government, or a copy of their passport or the school ID card with a photograph, or their original or certified birth certificate. And if we have someone who's looking for, like, newborn screening or blood lead results, we're going to have the parent send in their identification because they're the one who's requesting it, but we're also requesting either a copy of the birth certificate or proof of adoption or guardianship so that we can verify that that person has a right to get those results. And then if it's a personal representative of the patient, we're asking them to submit a copy of either their health care or durable power of attorney. Or, you know, if it's other things like the patient's deceased, what records they have that allows them to get that information. So those are some of the identification information that we're looking for. We've also made a decision that we're going to use our up to 30 days to turn around the results, and that if I get a request from a person and the test was just done last week, We're not going to release those results until after 21 days because we want the provider to have an opportunity to meet with that patient and talk with that patient about those results. So it's kind of a gist, I think, of where we are with ours, our policy. Does that help any?
Can I ask a question on something that you commented on?
Sure, go ahead.
This is Denise Toney from the State Lab in Virginia. I'm curious if you had to address any situations with respect to the 30 days and how that might conflict with FOIA law in your state, because what I'm struggling with is in Virginia, with respect to FOIA, we have 5 business days to respond, and in my interpretation of these types of requests, they really do fall under FOIA. So the 30 days conflicts with the 5 days, and I'm curious if anyone else had that discussion with their legal advisories.
In North Carolina, well, first of all, I don't think we would consider these FOIA because they're treatment medical records. And you know, we didn't go that route because in North Carolina, I don't think we have a time frame for responses to FOIAs. It's ambiguous to say within a reasonable time frame. And we've actually had some complaints from various organizations saying we have not responded. 6 months is not reasonable, for example. So we weren't really boxed in to prove whether it was a FOIA or not because of that.
And this is the person speaking is Bob Martin, who is our HIPAA person for us with the laboratory in public health. Any other questions or comments? How about some of the other labs out there? How are y'all doing?
This is Charlene from Alabama, and sort of like how the others, we have spoken with our legal staff, and we have a plan. It has yet to be started, but we have a game plan listening to what some of you have said. In fact, tomorrow morning, North Carolina, I'm going to your website to look at your documents, and Dr. Massengill wasn't able to be here today, but then we can kind of go forth with our actual steps as to what we will be doing.
Charlene, you can call me.
Okay, thanks.
It all starts with the updated notice of privacy practices,
yeah.
And then that directs them where to go to initiate the request.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I did do, I put it on our website, but I didn't make it like up front and central. I mean, I put it under a tab for forms and access to lab results and stuff because I'm still kind of curious as to find out how much response we're even going to get. I mean, how many people actually are aware that they can get their laboratory test results?
Went through lobby for it.
And I was just wondering if anybody who has had this in, is there anybody on the call who has had this in place for a while? Speak up. I guess not. I guess we're all in the same thing that we're coming up at the last minute.
Sherry from Oregon, did you have some patient access available before? Sherry, either you're on mute or you've left the call.
Can you repeat the question?
Did Oregon have patient access available prior to this ruling?
That was actually what we were discussing when you asked the question. Is that, because I'm new here, I'm from another state, I don't know all the state laws yet, and so I'm going to have Cheryl answer your question, if that's okay.
That'd be great.
This is Cheryl Hermerath. I'm manager for the Newborn Screening Program here at the State Public Health Lab. Oregon passed some legislation, I believe, several years ago that required patient access to test results. They can provide us with a request, and we have a 7-day waiting period, I believe, to get things together and to respond. So we've already had something in place prior to this, and I'm not sure that, you know, we're not going to make any changes since we already have the legislation and the time frame is a lot less than what the federal, the 30-day is.
Do you get many requests?
Not so much. We get a few here and there. Tends to be a lot in the way of legal requests, but not so much from the patient or the parent for, like, newborn screening. Newborn screening we tend to do a little bit differently here, and if we have a parent who requests test results, we cannot verify that that parent has legal access to those in cases of potential adoption or custody issues. So we actually have the family and the parent requesting it go through the child's pediatrician or medical practitioner, and we will forward the results to them, and they have the responsibility of confirming that the parent has the right to have those results.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Tammy Tyson. I'm calling from a local Saginaw County Department of Public Health. And I, thank you, Marty, I used their form and I tweaked it and had a procedure, presented that. And I'm being asked to have the existing form and wondered if anybody else, mainly the locals, have been asked this. There's this form they call Authorization for Use and Disclosure. It was basically formulated in order for us to release patient records to another physician, agency, doctor. And has anybody else been asked to use an existing form and try to tweak our obligation?
This is Bob in North Carolina. We did not go that route because under HIPAA, an authorization is one not required to release treatment information for treatment purposes, and two, an individual is not required to execute an authorization for their own medical information. So we felt that that was imposing a burden that someone familiar with HIPAA would have raised an objection to.
So let me get this straight, because I'm not a secretary, I don't write fast. You say an individual is not authorized to ask for a release?
No. If I wanted to go to my doctor or any provider, they must release the information I request to them unless there are certain restrictions that they have to justify, but I do not need to sign anything to get my own medical records. HIPAA does not impose that restriction, nor does Dr. A need to have a patient sign off an authorization to send my medical information to Dr. C, who was also involved in my treatment, nor do I need to authorize releasing my information to bill my insurance company. Now, that's the HIPAA standard. Organizations are free to use what was originally called a consent, okay? And there is no standard for HIPAA consent, but they say that it's allowable. And you can use that for treatment and payment and healthcare operation purposes. But the authorization is for releases of information outside of what they call TPO or treatment, payment, and healthcare operations. And the individual always has the right, without restrictions, to request their own information.
Thank you very, very, very much.
Yeah, Tammy, that would be a good argument to use, that it burdensome, it's more than HIPAA requires for the patient. That's a great argument.
And, you know, if we were in a different situation here as a laboratory being an indirect provider, because CLIA put the requirements on, you know, we have the right to authenticate in any way we can because we don't see the patient, okay? A healthcare provider doesn't have that burden ordinarily when there's direct treatment relationship. So we had to do, the reason we even have the form essentially is for the authentication requirements under the upgraded regulations, not for them to really get their information. It's to prove that it is for them.
Oh, you just saved me. Thank you.
Yeah, but again, don't quote me, and I can't. I'm just reiterating HIPAA. Okay, I can't give legal advice.
He just happened to join us on our call, and we didn't mean to put him on the spot. But, you know, one of the things I found, this is Karen again, I was talking to a lot of local health department managers, and I found out that a lot of our locals, they actually have a system where they give a patient a code or a number or something so that they can then call back in and give that pre-assigned information, and that's how they give results out on their side. But since we don't have that way of doing it and we don't have a patient portal, we had to come up with something else. We do have a statement on our form that says that the person is stating that they understand that this request is valid for the patient listed above, you know, and they're basically saying that they're attesting to sending us the correct information. And all. And of course, we're requiring them to sign it, and if it's not signed, we will not process it. We also made a decision that we are only going to mail or fax results, because depending on how they want to receive them, because that's really the only options that we have available. Our email system here is all public record, and it would be extremely difficult to go the encryption route and to make that work.
They can walk in, too.
Yeah. Any comments?
Yeah, this is Marty from Michigan. It was our understanding that the law requires us to provide it in whatever format the patient requests, and if we have the capability to provide it in electronic format, we must do that. And how we're going to get around that is if they request it to be emailed, and again, our legal people are actually going to be sending out the reports for us. We will send them the report, and then they'll handle this. But they're going to suggest that it be encrypted, but if the patient doesn't have the Savvy or WinZip or whatever they need to, is this wrong?
We can't get around that one. We have state requirements about encrypting protected health information. That we can't get around. So that's our fallback position, to say we don't truly have the capability to generate it electronically, nor could we send it, you know, to their electronic health record, for example, or if they had a PHR, you know, or Google Health Vault or anything like that. We're just not able to go down that route right now.
Does anybody have any questions out there about how, you know, putting this together?
This is Jackie Smith from South Dakota. I have a question about the verification of the patient. I think North Carolina, you said that you're having them send you a photocopy of their driver's license or photo ID. If you're a facility that never sees the patient, how do you know that that's really their photo ID?
I don't know that we would be able to do that, but we can at least match up the name and the birth date. And, and it's documentation. They're saying this is their legal documentation, and that's what they're sending us, and we can only match it up to what we have on our specimen submittal form.
Hello?
Okay. I think the reason we chose those is because maybe they're less likely to be doctored, but who knows?
Then will you compare the signature on the driver's license with the signature on the form? Because that's what we try to do.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Check the provider.
Yeah,
if there's something suspicious, I mean, we will try to take another step to verify.
Yeah.
And then some of this we'll have to see, you know, based on the types of requests we get. And you know, as I said, this is a new process, and it might not be material, and it might become burdensome. But short of, you know, some kind of biometric or, you know, an in-person, there's not much other way we can
also
validate.
Also, in the request, we include the date of service, the tests that were ordered.
Yes.
So they have to know specific things in order for us to continue process.
Yeah, and where it was collected at.
This is Charlene in Alabama. If through your verification method things don't match up, then will your institution be able to send a letter to that person saying, hey, it didn't match up, we're not going to give you a result?
We do that now.
Yeah.
Oh.
If we have any questions, we will contact the provider, and if we determine that we cannot release the results, we will send them a letter. Still have to draft one.
We'll use a draft similar to the one we use for our legal requests.
Yeah. Is Roberta on the call, by chance, from South Carolina? I guess not. Because I know they have had a process in place for a little bit.
And I believe Roberta shared her documents that are they are also on the Member Resource Center.
Oh. Which, I have a question then. For the Member Resource Center, which keywords should we put in? Because I looked today and I didn't pick up anything else new, I thought.
I think if people are posting anything, we've asked them to use the words CMS or CLIA.
Yeah, I looked at CLIA. Okay. We'll check again.
And maybe she didn't get them up there. I can follow up with her.
Okay. I did see a lot of new stuff, but not related to this, that I was interested in.
Good. This is a good plug for people to use the Member Resource Center on the APHL website. This is available to anyone from a public health laboratory. You do not have to be named as one of the delegates or any type of member requirement.
The other thing I'll just mention, this came up in the last call. If anybody who weren't on the last call, and this is what we're planning to do, is that we will put together a little packet of all of the information that is related to the request, you know, the form, a copy of the documentation copies, if we're able to find the reports, and I believe we decided we need to keep that for 6 years. And so we will be filing that information. And that way, you know, and the best defense I think we have against fraud is that, you know, if we have our policy and we could show that at the time that the request was made, we met our policy and we vetted everything that was in our policy, that's the route that we're planning to go.
This is Bill Solana from Arizona. I was going to ask, does anybody else have issues or problems related to not just verifying in-state individuals from in-state, but international documents, validating something coming in? Do you have policies set up on what the appropriate documentation is going to be for international requests?
We would probably look at a visa or a passport, and I think they would also have to furnish us some information on, you know, we only do testing on North Carolina residents, so I think they'll have to furnish us information on what was their address or what was their, their location in North Carolina, that information when they were here. I'm sure that we will be modifying what we've got, but we had to start somewhere.
Thank you.
This is Barbara in Virginia. Along those lines, what about people who are in this country illegally? Does anyone have any plan to handle that sort of situation?
No.
We cannot. Our health departments, which do the testing, cannot deny treatment and cannot ask legal status. They tried to pass a law here that required that, and I don't think it happened. So if we have a specimen for somebody and they request it and they don't have the valid documentation of a a government-issued ID, I guess we wouldn't release the information and we go back to the provider. If they're
okay.
there legally,
okay.
then they have a government issue. We don't know their status.
Yeah, we're not going to question that.
Give me a photo. Are you there?
All right, sorry about that.
Yeah, we have 50,000 approximately of that wave of child migrants enrolled in our public schools. So I imagine we will be getting some testing.
Yeah, we have a getting pretty good large refugee population.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, it might have been 15 out of the 57 is what it was.
Any other comments, questions out there?
I had another question. This is Barbara again. Are waived tests, and I'm saying WAIVED,
yeah.
are they covered under this?
I would say that yes, they are. From a former CLIA surveyor standpoint, I would say WAVE tests did not fall under the same laboratory reporting guidelines that the moderate and the high complexity testing did. So it was more up to your organization. But since CLIA, and that's an interesting question because the CLIA regulations, the way they modified it, actually applies to moderate and high complexity testing. However, there are no regulations for WAVE testing. And since HIPAA says now that you have to be able to send the lab those results out, I would say that, yeah, you would have to produce it, give out those results.
What's an example?
This is Charlene from Alabama again. Usually with that WAVE test, that's going to be done at the facility, the clinic, because those are such easy tests to be done. Tests sent to your main laboratories will probably be the moderate complexity or high complexity.
Yes.
This is Paul Buckner from Kentucky. If your lab has a certificate and is doing moderate and complexity tests, then the WAVE testing is covered under that certificate.
Yes, but it's not inspected to the same level.
No, and it's not inspected, but the requirements for handling of the test are under the certificate qualifications.
But anyway, the CLIA, the HIPAA change does override all of that, and according to HIPAA, then I think you would be required to, you know, to report those tests. I've been trying to share this information with our local health departments, and a lot of them are not aware of this change in the rules.
This is Tammy from a local health department that, you know, we have a separate lab in addition, and their thinking is using this authorization for release form, because when I brought it up and tried to explain it to them, they said, we already have something in place for that. So maybe we need to educate them a little bit more. I think, Bob Martin, you did an awesome job at that.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions, comments?
This is Marty. I just wonder, I mean, do the rest of you feel like we're just really going to get an onslaught of requests? I'm thinking the activity is probably going to be fairly slow. I don't think that there's going to be a big press announcement on October 6th or anything like that. And we've had one request so far that I know of, but I just don't think people are counting down their calendars till October 6th and they can call and get their lab results from us.
This is Bob Martin. From the earlier discussions from the people that were advocating for this, it's mostly centered around chronic disease under mm-hmm. medical management, things like diabetes and, you know, cholesterol levels, I mean, and all of this other kind of stuff where there really shouldn't be a barrier to that. I think that's where the push was coming from.
you know, in the spirit of HIPAA, that I should have access to all free and unrestricted access to all of my health information. And, you know, this is a barrier to accessing that, but they didn't think through all of the other nuances on these other kinds of tests. But that's where really I think the push came. You know, everyone was going to get a personal health record, and you're going to carry your medical history out there on either a little key fob or out there in the cloud, so wherever you go, you don't have to get retested, et cetera. And I think that was the real thrust to it all.
This is Leela Filson from Florida. Does anybody know if there's going to be any exceptions such as HIV? Are they going to be excluded from this rule?
No.
Unless your state law.
Unless state, yeah.
Well, no.
This trumps state law.
This trumps because it's CLIA. Well, HIPAA, I'd have to actually look at the relation there because HIPAA does defer to stricter state health state laws. And how that intersects with the incorporation of CLIA here, I'd have to look. It's not material for us because
we don't have any.
Our confidentiality state laws have been updated in the recent years to comport with HIPAA. So we didn't have to face that. But I would definitely look into your state because if you do have stricter HIV or any communicable disease laws, if HIPAA's the driver here, then the state law would trump HIPAA. Wouldn't trump the CLIA part. So you'd have to see how those two intersect, and that would be a legal question.
And then also, too, if you have information from the provider that turning out those results would be detrimental to the
right.
patient, then you can, you should follow those guidelines.
Yeah, under HIPAA, when I mentioned before about the unrestricted access to an individual's health information, if in the medical provider's professional judgment, the releasing of any of that medical information that could prove to be detrimental, you have to document and justify your medical decision about that, but you do have that option of not to release to an individual. But I would look into the intersection of CLIA, HIPAA, and its relationship with your state laws and preemption.
Yeah, in North Carolina, we are not planning to make any distinction. And in fact, probably the most requests that we do get for test results are people wanting to know their HIV status and newborn screening results on children. Any other comments out there? Is there anything else we can discuss that would help you?
What if I not?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Did it go in your draft folder?
Okay.
Does everybody feel they're ready for those first phone calls next week?
No.
We have 30 days to respond, you know.
You still have to take the phone call.
That's true, darn.
But, to the voicemail.
Yeah, and I think from our last call, we talked, we were asking how CLIA would, for those of us who are inspected by CLIA, how, you know, we would show compliance. And they said it was primarily by, you know, updating your privacy practices and I guess the fact that we have a policy in place for that. When I had talked to my local CLIA surveyors, I asked them had they had any training on this, and they said, no, not yet.
I had one comment I wanted to make when someone earlier mentioned that for results on a minor of sexually transmitted disease, for example, if you got a phone call from the parent, you would not even confirm whether you had the testing or not. We're not planning to give any information over the phone, like whether we did or did not do testing or we,
yes.
You know, we're just saying, okay, we'll be happy to help you. Here's you have to make the request in writing and here's where you can find the form. Because We don't know that that caller is who they say they are, and it might be enough to just know that their kid got tested for.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was going to put that out as a cautionary note.
That's actually instructions that I'm putting in my training tomorrow, that if somebody calls in and wants to get the results, that you direct them to the website to get the form, or you send the form to them.
Yeah, now I think you were talking if they were to call back and say, why didn't you release the results?
Mm-hmm.
And we would just say, we have no record of these results.
Yeah. And, I mean, we would send a written response that we have no record of the response.
Oh. But that when their lawyer calls.
Yeah.
I just know that in our training, some of our techs who are used to being very helpful for, like in our TB lab, for example, it was a hard concept for them that they wouldn't look up in the computer at that moment,
mm-hmm.
see whether we had a report. So I was just kind of surprised that we had that reaction from our staff, and I was sort of glad it came up.
Public health, at least here, always tries to be helpful.
Yeah, we actually have some very helpful people, too, so it's going to be, it's a learning curve. And you know, I will be glad to share or talk with anybody if I can be any assistance, you know, going forward.
All of them. All those who hurt, yes.
Yeah, we all learn from each other.
And again, any documents you want to share, we're happy to post them on the Member Resource Center. I can post them for you, or you actually all have access to post them yourself. Just put CMS rule change in the keywords. We did kind of looked while we've been talking, and Oregon's form is up there as well.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, are you going to put my form up, right?
Your form is now up.
Okay.
It was just waiting for the final approval that had to go through, and it's up.
Okay. It's a draft. Yeah. Is there anything else that we need to discuss? Because otherwise, I guess, are we ready to close the call? Last chance.
Good luck.
Quick question. This is Charlene again. Someone said an announcement on October 6th about the rule change.
An announcement?
Or was I hearing things?
We're required to be in compliance by October 6th.
I got it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and our notice of privacy practices will be effective on October 6th.
Yeah.
So if someone calls on October 5th for results, we would probably defer.
Well, we won't be here.
Yeah. but we're not going to announce that this is a new and improved lab feature.
Yeah. Great.
But like I said, I am struggling with, I'm doing my first training session tomorrow and then doing another one on Monday, so I'm trying to get it across to folks.
Yeah, but I'm actually doing a career thing for Joyce Lloyd's group, and it's part of the whole biotech thing.
Okay.
Hey, Karen, this is Rick in Tennessee. Do we want to think about, or would there be any value in maybe after 3 months or so getting together to see what our experience has been, if we're getting overwhelmed or we're hardly getting any calls or how it went?
Yeah, I'll make a note of that, and I'll put something out on the QA listserv to at least start that conversation, and we can always convene another call if needed. That's never a problem.
Thanks.
I want to thank you.
It will be interesting to see how many calls you all get. So, sorry, Karen, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just going to say I want to thank everybody for, you know, giving their information and comments and questions and stuff today, because this is always very helpful to me. I'm still learning a lot.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.